Welcome back, Creek Talkers. This is part three and our final installment of our Craig Edwards interview. If you haven't listened to part one or part two yet, make sure you click on our link tree in our bio and download those episodes on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And we hope that you enjoy them. We're also hoping that Craig comes back and talks to us some more. And stay tuned because there may be a bonus episode with some of the stuff we had to put on the cutting room floor. But right now, sit back and relax and enjoy the finale of our Craig Edwards interview. Bye!
Creek Talk, talking about the creek. Creek Talk, talking about the creek. Creek Talk, talking about the creek. Talking about Dawson's Creek.
The other question that we had was, how do you say this?
Arseri Dario 93 asks, is there a possibility that there would be a reboot and would you be involved?
You know what? I have another job right now that pays the bills and I don't think I could get time off. I know I couldn't get time off to do an entire season of something if they were to come back to do 13 or 22, you know, somethings. But what I really would, if they came back to Wilmington and were going to do, for example, Kerr has talked about some kind of a sequel show involving the children of the original characters, and Officer Doug would be kind of the lead parent types, I think is how that goes. If they came to shoot that here, even just a pilot to see if it goes, I would really try to at least do a day of my old job on it. I would see if they would let me come in and run first team just to do it for all, to see everybody and to you know, have the feels, so to speak.
Yeah.
Now would the network or the production let me? I don't know. Kind of depends who's in there. If it's some of the people that were involved in the old show, I think I'd have a fairly good shot. I think if the actors knew I wanted to, that might swing things in my direction. I'm not trying to take a job away from anybody. I would just like to be there. I think it would be a marvelously cool feeling to be knocking on trailer doors and saying, you know, they're ready for you on set again.
It'd be very nostalgic.
It would. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Very nostalgic. That would be really cool if they did like a spinoff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really cool.
The odds are, though, that's, I mean, there's so many odds against it. You know, it would have to shoot a pilot, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Would it go? You know, that those odds. And then would it come here? You know, hard to say. They can fake things so easily now with digital and everything that it would all come down to money. If it made more sense to shoot it in Canada or anywhere else, they'll shoot it anywhere else. Unless somebody like her is like an executive producer on it in addition to his acting, and he insists, you know, that's one of them. It'd be like Kevin Williamson saying it has to come here kind of thing.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that have to come here, this may interest you guys. So when Dawson's wrapped, the head of the WB was a man named Garth Ancier.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to every show running producer for every show on the WB and said, we love Wilmington. Dawson's is leaving Wilmington. Somebody is going to pick up and take their show to Wilmington, and laid it out. And I guess all those guys got together and I forget his name, but the One Tree Hill guy, Mark something. He was the one that finally accepted. And that's why One Tree Hill came here to shoot. And it helped a lot of the crew switched right over and continued on. So that 6-year run that they had done on Dawson's became a 15-year run by the time they did 9 seasons of One Tree Hill. That's almost a career.
Yeah.
So, you know, thank you, Garth Ancier. I mean, you know, I wasn't there, but I'm glad that a lot of my buddies and colleagues got to just go right on into another long-running show. Good for them.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, too, but I mean, we went and did extra work on One Tree Hill as well for the first second season, I believe. And then we didn't go back after that. We just sort of like lost interest in it, but because it wasn't the same. We just loved the town, you know. We loved Wilmington, and just we had so many fun spots that we would go to. But going to do the extra work on a different show, like, and I wasn't even interested in One Tree Hill at all. I was so interested in Dawson's Creek. And it was, like I said, it was good for nostalgia, but at the same time, I was just like, all right, when are we wrapping up here? Because, like, let's go out to, it was Hell's Kitchen or something. I was like, let's go to Hell's Kitchen. Like, I want to go get a drink or something. But,
you know, put a pin in Hell's Kitchen. I want to go back to that. But I want to ask you more about this, because now I'm going to ask you some questions, because that what you just said really interested me. So Seek 2 coming back and doing the extra work. I mean, the process of the extra work was the same. You did some paperwork. You showed up whatever time. They checked your makeup and hair, wardrobe, whatever. And you went to set and they told you walk over there, do this, mm-hmm. whatever. So that was all exactly the same. But was the feeling on the set different? Was it that the cast was different? Why was it such a different thing for you?
I just wasn't as excited. I didn't really care about the, it was exciting to see the actors, because you're seeing actors, you know, but
right.
But I wasn't as familiar with everything about that show as I was with Dawson's Creek. Okay. And when we did Dawson's Creek, we would see the same crew people and we would remember them. And even a lot of the same extras we would see. And and we did it in the summertime. And the last year we did Dawson's Creek was in April during the spring. It was like right around Easter, I remember, because we were going to be away.
Okay.
So I just remember just feeling just seeing the same people, recognizing the same people and seeing the same extras, that type of thing. And just because I was so engrossed in the show and loved those characters and those actors so much.
Yeah.
So when we got to One Tree Hill, I just wasn't like about it that much. I remember me and my friend Aubrey did a scene in a classroom scene with Hillary Burton and Sophia Bush. And Joanna Kearns was directing the episode, who was mother on Growing Pains.
Right.
And I remember listening to Hillary Burton shit talk Joanna Kearns because she didn't like the direction she gave her. And I remember going to Aubrey, I was like, she's talking shit about the mom from Growing Pains. And she was like,
Carol Seaver.
Yeah, Carol Seaver.
Right.
I can't think of her name. And she was like, what do you mean? I was like, because I was just there. I was very close to them at that point. It was weird. And I was just like listening to her. And I remember Hillary Burton was being like, I don't understand why she's giving me this direction. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand why they're giving me. It was weird. And I was just like, until they told us to leave, I was like, no, I want to keep listening.
Who told you to leave? Like
it was ready to like move. Yeah, like a production person. And they were like,
so the actresses didn't tell you to move.
No.
Okay.
No. There was a guest star that season. It was a brother and sister storyline. Okay. I felt it was like just like Dawson's Creek because they brought in Andy and Jack during the second season. And then during season 2 of One Tree Hill, they brought in that brother and sister team. We met the brother, the actor who played the brother. And I'd have to look him up. I can't even remember what his name is. But he talked to us the whole time. When we like, he was just chatting with us while we were like waiting to be called in to do a scene or whatever, you know, like how they pick you and they're like, you come with me.
Yeah.
We were out one night and we were down on Water Street. Like, you know, the thing that they're sitting on that really famous picture that the cast of Dawson's Creek is sitting on in the middle of the town. It looks like I don't know what exactly it is.
It's like some kind of utility thing.
Yeah.
And it's right at the base of Market Street, right at the river. Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah.
So we were like standing over there and he walked right up to us and he was like, what are you guys up to? And we were like, well, we don't know yet. We were going to like go get dinner or whatever. And he pretty much invited himself with us. And yeah, we were like so excited. And then he kind of ditched us. And we were like, well, that's not cool. We were like kind of getting along with him. I thought he was going to hook up with my friend.
That's funny.
It was interesting. That was cool about it, but I didn't love that show as much as I love Dawson's Creek. And I don't think I ever will. I just couldn't get into it. But going back to that city or that town and in North Carolina was like, Craig, I would have dreams about it just because it was just, it sounds so stupid to say, but it's such a magical place to me. Like we would walk around and everything was just so easy and like, calm and everybody was so nice and like the waterfront and going to the beach and you know, we ate at Water Street Restaurant like every night we were there. I loved that restaurant. And like, then I remember I heard they got rid of it and I was so disappointed. And yeah, going to Port City Java. Like, I have all this shit in a binder somewhere that I have to like pull up and post on our Instagram. But I've been waiting to do like an episode and bring my friends on and talk about doing extra work. And,
you know, oh, you absolutely should, because yeah. People don't understand that. And I think that would be a great and informative episode. So yeah, please.
Yeah.
I think that would be wonderful. I'm pleased that we had this piece of the chat, because I really, I've not really talked to many people who, other than people behind the camera, but for somebody like you who comes down more from the fan side of things, how different those shows were, even though there was a lot of continuity of crew. So that was very interesting to hear you say that. I did want to ask too, where was the school? What were they using for school? They didn't redress our set, did they?
No, I don't think we were on a set. Honestly, Craig, I don't remember.
Like location, likely?
I feel like it was a location. And I don't remember it. My friend Aubrey might remember, but I don't remember.
I have a feeling it was probably the university, because they would have had more space for a crew to move into than any of the local high schools would have. So probably.
Probably. I wish I could remember it right now, but it's just, I don't remember.
It'll hit him in the middle of the night tonight. I'll be like, ah.
Yeah. Just when you're turning midnight, he'll be popping up in bed going, hey, it was.
Yeah, exactly. I'll get a text message and I'll be like, Jame, I remember. I'll probably be awake.
So Hell's Kitchen, just in case nobody knows, you know, what they did there was, it's hard to take over a business. We kind of owned, no, we didn't. The Leary's Fresh Fish was a working restaurant and we would rent it out for episodes. So we shot there generally, no matter what time it was happening in the episode, we shot there in the early part of the day, so we could be out of there by a certain time so that they could actually serve food to customers at some point later in the day.
Wow.
But for Hell's Kitchen, they created that set, even though that was after my time, I know about it. They took over an unused bar area, storefront, whatever you want to call it, and created that as a set. So it was like the video store in season one, where it was not a working thing, but it was not also a set at the studio. It was there where you see it, between second and third, or front and second. And the boggling part about that is somebody bought it and with minimal changes to the interior have kept it open as Hell's Kitchen all these years. And it's still there and still going.
Wow.
And, you know, they brought in some props or something that weren't, and they took down, I think, the bras, because that was the kind of sassy, saucy thing where everybody threw their bras up and they hooked on something like that. That's gone. And they've got like a boat in there now, one of the smaller, not like the True Love, but some kind of smaller, maybe the rowboat. Something's in there and it's up on one wall. But I mean, that's in number one, in Wilmington, restaurants usually change identities every 6 months.
Really?
You know, I mean, things open up as X and then 6 months later they're Y. And it just never, you know, even if it's a good location, they turn over to new owners and stuff. And this has been owned by, you know, as far as I know, one guy, and it's been Hell's Kitchen, and it's 20 years. Yeah. So the first place I tell everybody, they say, I'm coming to Wilmington, what can I see from the show? What's still around? Go to Hell's Kitchen for sure, because you'll definitely know that. And then, you know, downtown is a treasure trove for Dawson's people, because you can still see the exterior of the video store still looks like it, very much like it. And just those streets and Water Street, there's so much visually. The wall's kind of covered up now, but you can still see remnants of it. And so that's where I generally tend people, you know, I tell people, you can't go to Dawson's house. Joe's house is still there, but it's hidden. But they built another house on the property between the road and the house. So if you're driving by, you can't see Joey's house anymore. It's hidden. It's like on the side yard of this other house. Weirdly, I don't know what that's all about, but it's still there. They didn't tear it down. So,
is it the house that was in the first couple of seasons, or is it the B&B house? Did they rebuild that when it was the B&B?
That's I don't understand what happened with that.
Like the Potter Shack?
The shack to the B&B.
Yeah, that was, you know, it was a rental property and we just rented it for the entirety of the season. So whatever the monthly rent was, we just paid for like 9 months. And we weren't displacing anybody. That was another, much like Hell's Kitchen and the video store, that was an exterior set. It was away from the studio, but that's why they were able to use so much of the interior of it, is even though we didn't have fly out walls, which that means being able to remove a wall so you can get the camera into different shots. But they were okay with that. And that's why, like, if you look at my social media, my Instagram, you'll see what's called the couch pictures. And that's, because they had to move the couch out for the B&B episode to get the camera right where the couch was sitting. And then all of the actors just congregated on it. And we got these wonderful pictures. Michelle's like trying to take a nap around this couch. But it was in however you saw it, you know, it was set dressed in the early part of the first couple of seasons. And then they did actually fix it up, just like you see in the show. And of course, the owners of the place were all for it because they're going to end up with an even better place when we're done with it. They've been, you know, had a rejuvenated paint job and everything. So, yeah, I mean, everybody was all for that. And that was a great place. Logistically, it was perfect because it was off the road. We had parking in a field right nearby, catering, extras holding, which wasn't much of anything for that location. But, I mean, everything was right there and it was off the main road and everything was in walking distance. So we didn't have to take vans everywhere. And the only negative to it was we had to hold traffic for exterior shoot when we were outside the house. Traffic out on the road just a few hundred yards away, they had to hold it, and the locals hated that. So we would get a lot of horns honking and stuff.
I remember when we went to go to Dawson's house, my friend Aubrey was more of the like daredevil of us. I remember we were in a cab, and she was like, "No, we're going to go to the house." And we get there and it was like private property. Yeah. And we started walking up. We got out of the cab and we started walking up and we got kind of spooked and we left. But there were people up there. And I was just like, well, why are we stopping? Like, there's other people up there. It looked like they were taking pictures.
Yeah.
And, I never got a picture of it in person, but I know she did. And yeah, she'll have to tell her story when we have her on. But that is like one thing I do regret, not being able to go see it back then, because we got like a little scared when we were driving up that. So I remember just seeing a lot of it was like not a field, but it was like sort of hidden, I feel like, with,
yeah,
like it wasn't grass either. I don't know what it was, but it was just hidden away.
Yeah, it really was, because you went onto what was called Head Road, and I'm going to say that don't go to Dawson's house because they will call the police on you, I think. But that's what we called it. We just said we're going to Head Road tomorrow, and that meant we were going to Dawson's house. And base camp was up on Head Road, and then it was this long gravel, very long. I mean, quarter mile, half mile, mile.
Yeah, gravel. It was gravel.
Really long driveway, and it went straight down to Dawson's house, but right before you got to that, there was a branch off to go to Grams's house. She had a little branch off of that. And there was a whole other house or two over on the other side. We never did anything with them. And they were further back. I don't think you saw much of them in any of the shots around the exterior of Dawson's house. But there were at least one or two other neighbors over there. And they all share that driveway. And I guess somewhere in that driveway now is the do not trespass sign that was not there back then. But I mean, that just loading everybody in the vans and base camp at Head Road and driving down that long patch one night, makeup and hair and wardrobe and me and Michelle and Katie and the radio Brown Eyed Girl came on by Van Morrison, and we all sang it like a giant karaoke band going down to see one of my most fond memories of that, you know, entire run of work.
Awesome.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So what are you up to now? You're not doing anything in the entertainment business at all?
Well, I did a horror short, which was really difficult around the pandemic, with one of the stunt coordinators from Dawson's, a guy named Dino Muccio, wrote and directed this demonic possession, conjuring-esque, that kind of thing. set on an island, and it was like a 30-minute short, and we shot that. It took a big chunk of 20 and 21, and even I think into early 22. And it's been making festival rounds and winning some small awards. So it's, you know, it was pleasant. And it was a lot of fun to get back on set. I was the first assistant director for Dino running his set. Cool. And I loved it. It scratched an itch to be back on a set, to be honest. But the work is just too impermanent. You know, when you come off of a job, same every season that I did Dawson's, I wasn't even guaranteed to come back. You kind of assumed you were going to get to come back, but you're as unemployed as anybody's ever been. When any show ends, you're not working for a studio that then just says that. The old days, you would just go to your job at the studio and they would say, today you're working on this Jimmy Cagney movie. And then that would wrap and you'd come back in on Monday and they go, now you're working on this Humphrey Bogart movie. But we're unemployed. We're completely laid off is what it was called. And we could get unemployment and everything because we were so completely unemployed. And right. Even off of Dawson's, like I said, you weren't guaranteed. There was no multi-season promises or contracts or anything like that. And all the assistant directors changed. For example, most assistant directors have production assistants that they work with regularly. So had we had a big shakeup for whatever reason, you know, there was no guarantee. We might well not have come back because they would have probably ensconced their production assistants, the new assistant director group. So
it's so interesting. I really did think how you explained it. Like you go in and they're like, you're working on this now, you're working on that now. I would just assume that whole crew would just continue working on whatever came into Wilmington because they have a studio there. And didn't they just film the last Scream? Not Scream 6. Didn't they film Scream 5 in Wilmington?
They sure did. Yeah. When Dawson walks, I don't know the character name, the older girl he meets in Providence or whatever, they're at the club and then he walks her out to her car. And it's Melissa McBride.
Blue eyeshadow.
Yes, exactly. Well, number one, the car they walk to is my car.
Oh, my God.
Transportation loved my car because it was this goony little blue Le Mans. So in many shows, the head of transportation would come to me and go, I need your car for this scene. And I always got a $50 bump and a full tank of gas out of it. So, yes, every time. Take it.
Go for it. Yeah.
And Melissa McBride even drove my car in two different shows. I mean, completely unrelated shows. And she drove my car in both of them. So
that's so funny.
Isn't it wild?
You have a famous car.
But that back lot was built for a movie in the 80s and they kept using it. It was in Turtles. It was in everything that shot here. If we needed a city street, it often shot back there on that back lot. Well, it went down, got damaged by a hurricane, and they tore it down and built the Martin Lawrence castle for Black Knight there that was shooting at the same time that we were still shooting Dawson's. And then after that wrapped and tanked at the box office and no sequel was forthcoming, they tore the castle down. So that was then empty ground. But they built Soundstage 10, and I've mentioned before, Soundstage 9 was built during the run of Dawson's. We had some sets in there. Well, 10 then got built where the backlot used to be, and it is the third largest soundstage in the world. So it's a really big one. And they put the entire swamp from the recent Swamp Thing series that was on the WB streaming service. The entire swamp was in there so they could have total control over that because they offered it to the makeup guys who had at one time worked on Dawson's. And they said, we're doing Swamp Thing. We don't want you to do the suits, you know, Swamp Thing, we want you to do the actors. And would you come in and do it? And they said instantly, are we going to be at Orton Plantation in the swampy water at midnight every Friday night? And they said, no, we're building it on a soundstage at the studio. And they said, yes, we're in. Right. Because nobody wanted to be at Orton Plantation, you know, kicking gators away from you.
Oh my God.
Which is where we shot with Child, by the way, to get the Dawson's connection in there. But that stage then held... After the swamp was torn down because that series got canceled, they built the Myers house and five other houses in that soundstage for Halloween Kills.
Really?
Yeah. So when you watch that, a lot of that stuff on the streets outside of Michael Myers' house is in a soundstage. And then after that got torn down, the Mocker house from the end of Scream 5, where the final whole run takes place, uh-huh. also in that same soundstage. So now we've got this Halloween Scream, you know, thing coming together.
Oh my God. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love that it's such a fun connection too, because I know Kevin Williamson was back on that set too with, you know, Nev Campbell and Courtney Cox and David Arquette.
Oh, absolutely.
And he was where Dawson's Creek was being filmed again. So I love that. Did you see Scream 5?
I did. I liked it.
Did you notice the clip that they had put in there from the scare episode in the hospital? I caught that so quickly, and I was just like, I love those Easter eggs. I loved it.
So here's a quick story about clips of things. So you remember that a clip from Jerry Maguire got shown in one of the Dawson's episodes. Mm-hmm. Well, they used to send out piles of the four shots of them on the dock before. Well, even after her and Meredith had joined us, they still would send out a lot of those. And they would come down from the office, and I was directed to get autographs from all of the four onto them. And over the course of a day or two, I would get everybody to sign 100 pictures. And I guess those, I don't know what all happened to them. But somewhere in there, a deal memo got included in the stack of photos. So I'm going through the photos, and I find this deal memo, and that's a piece of production paperwork. And it wasn't anything that I would normally have seen, but it was about that clip from Jerry Maguire. And it was that Jay Moore, Tom Cruise, and Renee Zellweger had all agreed to let that clip be shown for the standard pay of $3,000 each. So they all made $3,000 just for going, yeah, sure. And of course, you know, Tom Cruise, $3,000, it wouldn't have even felt that probably. But it's still interesting that that's, you know, when you see a clip of something. So it's nice to think that like the Dawson's actors got a little payday from having that clip be in Scream 5.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the director of that episode did too, which was, I believe, Rodman Flender directed that episode. So, yeah. That's one of my favorites, by the way, because I'm a horror film fan. So to spend a week doing Scream spoof stuff on Dawson's was a lot of fun. And I'm with Scott Foley was actually doing the call stuff with a voice modulator. And so we were actually on the stage of Grams's house, but way off to the side. And I was cueing him with the headset. I would get, you know, an action over this, and then I would just touch his arm so he knew to start the dialogue or whatever that the call was starting. So that was also a lot of fun.
I love that episode. I love that he was spoofing his own movie and all those horror movies at that time.
Yeah.
Because that during that time, that era, that all those movies were coming out, and because of Scream. And I mean, I went to see all of them. Like, I love horror movies too. I still have all of my Fangoria magazines. Like, it's ridiculous.
That's great.
I also love that episode because
can like I tell one story about that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Of course.
Okay. So while we're shooting season two. I Know What You Did Last Summer came out the fall of 98. Yeah, that sounds right. And that, of course, had shot in Wilmington and Southport right around the time the presentation pilot had been shot. They were shooting I Know What You Did Last Summer. So it comes out, and we make plans. By we, I mean me and some of the actors made plans to go see it because, of course, our boss had written it. So James and Katie and Josh and Monica Keena and me all go to see the movie on Saturday, early at matinee show. Well, when we come out, the local NBC affiliate is there doing interviews with people because the guy who wrote this movie that just opened has a series shooting in the area in Wilmington, although nobody knew the actors involved. So when I see the interviewing people, I go, you four should go and talk. And they did. And they go over and they praise the writing. That's about all that makes it into the little clip because it's a little short blurb on the news. But I caught that sucker, and that NBC affiliate still to this day doesn't know. They never realized because they forgot. You know, a year later when those kids blew up through the world, they didn't remember that they had this clip. But it is the four of them, and you can see it on a YouTube channel. I'll send you guys a link, and maybe you can figure out some way to link it out to the world. But yeah, you get to see the four actors before anybody knew who they were. I wish, you know, it's Monica instead of Michelle, so it's not the perfect foursome. But Michelle was busy that weekend, unfortunately. So that's why she and I went to see the sequel. And then everybody else was busy, so it was just she and I going to that one. But that one wasn't very good anyway. So.
I know what you're talking about. I saw it on TikTok a while ago, and I saved it, and I shared it on our feed. I swear you were in it.
Yeah, I am, actually, yeah. The next, after them, I think I'm the next one.
Yeah.
And then the ladies are interviewed. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I was like, I remember, I was like, that's Craig. I was like, that's so funny. Because I was getting to know who you were through social media. So when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, it's the Dawson's, it's the cast. And then they go to you next. And I said, it's Craig.
I'm intrigued. I wonder who put it up on TikTok, because I don't have a TikTok. So I wonder who.
I'll try to find it.
That's fine.
I'll save it.
Per se, but that's interesting.
I'll find it and save it, and I'll send it to you. I might still have it on my phone. Okay. I thought it was such a cool clip that the news was interviewing the cast. And like you said, they had no idea who they were. No. It was like one of those things where like somebody goes to see a movie the first weekend it opens, and the news is like, what did you think of the movie? And, you know, the people are acting like it was terrifying. And like, you know, like they kind of tell them what to say, but they look so excited to talk about it too. It was so fun to watch.
Well, they immediately seized on the idea of talking about the writing, and they said it was really well written, which, you know, you're praising the guy who's signing the paycheck, so to speak. So
right.
It was fun.
That is a fun movie, but it's very confusing to like who the killer was. But it's a fun movie to go back and watch, because everybody knows that Helen, aka Sarah Michelle Gellar, is the real star of that movie. Let's be honest here. So, Greg, were you like the guy that was like the fun guy on set that everybody would like wanted to hang out with, and were you the one like, you know, initiating like hangouts and stuff? Because I feel like if we were together, I'd be like, yeah, let's go out to a movie.
We're gonna drink. I'll always go see a movie. Yeah, somewhat, but there was a lot. I didn't go to all the beach partying. They would go out to Mason Burl Island, which is a big feature of a lot of Mary Margaret's videos. You can see a lot of footage that was shot out there. They went to Mason Burl because it was an island that you can only get to by boat. It literally is an island. And it cut down hugely on the actors having to interact with the public. Mm-hmm. Because very few people, I mean, people go out to Mason Burl, but they tend to stay in their groups. And so you just see a bunch of guys in the standard issue beachwear out there knocking around, guys and women. But I mean, you don't necessarily realize that's the cast and crew of Dawson's Creek unless you get a good look at, oh, wait, is that James Vanderbeek? And then, you know, then maybe you know. And so they would, I guess, get approached every once in a while. But for the most part, they could do all of their jet skiing and barbecuing on the beach and all of that with some modicum of privacy. And I did that some, but not nearly as much. And they were out there every weekend when it was warm, you know. So I, you know, I was doing other things. I was going to movies and stuff. So, because I'm a nerd. So,
clearly.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with Dawson's Creek. What's your favorite horror movie?
That's such a hard question. Halloween 1978, certainly up there. Scream is up there. I love Scream. I love so many. Friday the 13th is my favorite franchise just because it occupied so much of my high school years, my teen life. You know, I started seeing those movies as a barely into double digits and continued seeing them all, you know, right down the line for however long that ran, 8, 10 years, whatever that was. So that's my favorite franchise. But, you know, to say no, Halloween beats them in terms of a quality movie. So.
Mine's Nightmare on Elm Street. I was like that with Freddy. I watched those movies from the time I was like 5 or 6. And I would torture my older siblings to take me to one of those movies. And my mom never let them. And the first one I saw in the theaters was 5. And then after that, it was like, I saw like every single one. But did you like the new Halloween? The last one? And
I didn't hate it while I was watching it in the theater, but on reflection and showing it at a horror movie weekend after, you know, second run, my crowd didn't like it. Mm-hmm. And that kind of hurdle bit for me. And I've read people's complaints about it. And when they stated them, I was like, I kind of believe that. Maybe not the best idea to relegate the two biggest characters of the franchise off to the side and introduce a whole nother character, especially when that new character is not the linchpin of continuing the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Because he doesn't even make it to the end credits. So, you know, what was the point of that then? And I guess I kind of accept that. How were your feelings for it?
I thought it started off pretty good, and then all of a sudden I was like, what the fuck am I watching? I was like, what is
and that seemed to be a lot of people. Yeah, they had that feeling about it that, you know, when Michael Myers hadn't appeared by the 45-minute mark.
I was like, okay, he's Michael Myers. He just kills people, and he's just letting this kid just, like, control him. And Jamie Lee Curtis was, like, barely in it. I was like, whatever. I don't think it was very smart. I think that they were trying to do something inventive, but I don't think it necessarily worked. I thought it was pretty, like, gory for, like, a horror movie. But
yes, the kills were good. The kills were great.
It wasn't what I was looking for. I thought the second one was excellent. And I enjoyed the first one, but the third one, it sort of was like, I didn't really like it that much. But
I would watch
it again. I just like, it's not my favorite. Well,
reading those other people talking about it and kind of awakening me to it, you know, they're not wrong that the way that she was in the 2018 movie and then how she was at the beginning of Ends, you know, he killed her daughter and he's still on the loose. He killed two friends 40 years before, and she goes completely psycho and builds an armed compound in the woods awaiting his return. And then a film later, he kills her daughter. And then as the next film begins, he's still free, not dead, not captured. And she's baking pies and putting up Halloween decorations. And I was like, oh, wow. So I think you could take the three movies, and I think if you reworked them so that the armed compound is in movie three, and you could somehow I don't know exactly how you could work all of it, but if you could get that part in there where she's doing what she's doing in Ends in 2018, because she's just had a life and she's just a lady and everything's normal, and then she goes psycho and arms herself for the third one, that would all play better. But I don't know how well that could be actually done.
I honestly don't know what they were thinking when they were writing it. You know, they're making the new Exorcist as well, right?
I've heard that, and it is yet again a sequel, not a reboot. Yeah. So original legacy characters in it and the whole nine yards. I mean, the mom who I worked with on a TV movie, wonderful lady, Ellen Burstyn, she's going to be in it at least briefly. And I think they said Linda Blair is going to be in it somewhere, somehow.
Is she really? Wow.
I think I've heard, yeah.
I obviously will watch it. The Exorcist is my partner's like favorite movie ever. It's funny. But when I found out they were writing it and making like sequels, I was just like, oh, I hope they don't destroy it like they did with the last Halloween. But we'll see. I'm always like, look, I'm always down to watch anything. I don't listen to other people's opinions about anything. I go in and see if I like it or not. I hate when people are like, it was stupid, don't go see it. I'm like, well, I might like it. I might enjoy it. So
right. I want to
have my own opinion on it. So, but we'll see. It might be good. I don't know. They're more comedic writers. That's the thing. They're not based in horror. And that's what confuses me, why they hired them. But
we might know we're in trouble when we go into the movie and it starts with Reagan living in the woods in an armed compound against the devil. We might realize something is not
hiding from hiding from the devil.
Yeah. And then in the third movie, she's having, you know, satanic meetings in the house because the devil's good, he's fine. Yeah. So we'll see if they just follow the same arc right on through for three movies again. They got to bring the second one to Wilmington, though. So,
yeah, they should. They should.
They should.
I wanted to ask you also, what was the first project that you worked on?
Well, I was around an episode of an 80s series called Superboy, but that was just visiting. But that was the first thing I ever saw as a production. But actually, I was in A League of Their Own, the baseball movie with Gina Davis. I'm an extra in that. I'm an unpaid extra in that. I drove 6 hours, sit in that stadium, and be a guy just filling the stadium seats for the baseball scenes. And so that was unpaid. So I don't, you know, again, you could make a case that that's not really my first job. My first job would have been then Amos and Andrew, which was a movie that nobody remembers that starred Nicolas Cage and Samuel L. Jackson, of all people. I mean, what a cast, right? And it's a comedy. It's a racial comedy about people misunderstanding Samuel L. Jackson being a very rich writer who buys a house on a very private island. And they think when they somebody sees him, neighbors see him in the house playing with the stereo and think he's a thief, a burglar, and he gets arrested out of his own home. And then they have to try to, the chief of police has to figure out how to get out of this thing where he's arrested the owner of his own home. And it's a, you know, racially based thing with Samuel L. Jackson. But I was an extra in that. The news descends on it, and I'm one of the news guys, and I'm spottable in about 5 seconds, one shot of all of the reporters, and you can go, oh, there I am, you know, for a second. And that led into Super Mario Brothers, which is where I started doing production assistant work, because somebody on Amos and Andrew had said, you've been very helpful to me. I'm going to hire you on my next job. Her next job was Super Mario Brothers, and she made good on the promise and got me a production assistant job before it was over. So,
oh, that's awesome. Very I cool. love that they kept their word.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she was wonderful for that, because that's not always, you know, been the case. You know, there have been people who've made those kind of promises, and you got to take them with a grain of salt. You know, love you, baby, we'll do lunch kind of thing.
But, yeah.
You know, sometimes they don't pan out. But she got me that job. And once you start working, just as we said, we talked before about how actors get hot and they just keep go. They go one after the other type show. Yeah. Same kind of thing. I did a series called American Gothic that kept me busy for most of 95. And coming out of that show, all the other people in town were getting all the jobs, the shorter TV movies and things. And so they were popping. And I'd been off doing this one show from summer until, you know, early spring of the next year. It took forever to get back on a set, to get back into the rotation of people, you know, hiring you for the shorter jobs. So that was a big dead zone in my thing. But then the next year after that, I've worked from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. And that was the start of Dawson's too, in the summer. So
cool. Well, we should try to wrap it up, but because I could just talk all day to you about this.
Yeah.
Honest to God, when we logged off last night, we were talking. I was like, "This is a great episode." I was like, "It might be like two parts," because he said he gave us so much great content. I was like, "It's amazing."
Yeah, it's and, awesome.
You know,
well, I appreciate that.
Everybody knows who you are, Craig, in the fandom of Dawson's Creek. They do. Everybody
oh, wow.
More. And, you know, it's just, it's really cool that you were able to come on and talk to us and like give us this information and share your stories with us. You know, we're just a little podcast trying to make it happen. And
give us some clout. You guys are a lot of fun to talk to. You know, it's fun to talk to people who enjoy things. Going. You know, it makes standing up for 14 hours a day for 156 days a season, you know, it makes that, it has some value to somebody, and that's nice. And that's why I'm, you know, happy to talk to people about the show. It's fun to realize how much I remember sometimes, because other things, you know, have gotten fuzzy from that time frame. You know, things in my own life, you know, what was my birthday cake like during those years? I don't know, but I remember, you know, what it was like when Josh was having to spit in an actor's face. I remember that.
I know. I would think I would remember that before my birthday cake too.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
What was your favorite episode of the show that you worked on? Or no, what was your favorite?
Well, I have to go with on? Double Day.
What?
Sorry. What was
say
your
that again, favorite episode?
Yeah, what was your favorite episode of the series that you worked on? Because you worked through 1 through 4. So what episode that you worked on was your favorite out of all episodes?
Well, just strictly in the working sense, the tie is The Scare and Escape to Witch Island, or Escape from Witch Island, whichever the way that is. I just enjoyed the creepy stuff I like that anyway. And I and the way that they made which island look like an island, but it isn't. There's some stock shots that sell that it's an island, but that was Orton Plantation, which is right between, literally between Wilmington and Southport, two of our main, you know, places that we would go. And you just stop halfway and there's the plantation. It's this big swampy place. And they took over some of the buildings. I think we built the church. I think we built that. But they actually took over some other building and made the gift shop out of, you know, made it into a gift shop and everything. So all of that stuff that, as I said before, the illusion of things where we fake stuff, that's stuff that I love. That episode was directed by James Whitmore Jr., who is one of our, he directed a lot of episodes, really nice guy. So that also makes those episodes more pleasant when your director is, you know, somebody you're thrilled to see come back. And he's the son of a very famous actor. So I got to talk to him about his dad and stuff. So all of that made that fun for me. The scare, Robin Flender had worked for Roger Corman, a very famous producer of low budget genre film. So I got to spend, you know, I got to fanboy and talk to Robin Flender about working for Roger Corman in addition to all the horror movie stuff. So those two were standouts for me. And then Double Date, because I'm in it in the speaking role of the Carnival Barker, and that sucker is still paying me residuals to this day. Did you guys see that?
No, we'll have to go back and watch it. We watched that episode so long ago. We'll have to go back and watch it now.
Yeah, we'll have to go back and watch it.
Pissing match between Cliff and Dawson. That's me running that thing. Clean shaven, but they put a mustache on me because makeup could never let me go on camera without doing something to me. I'm also the Cape Side janitor. You guys don't realize that. But if you see anybody pushing a mop or broom in the high school, it's me.
Oh, my God. I love it.
That's so, so cool.
And, of course, we joke that those two guys are brothers, that one of them went off with the carnival and runs the game, and the other one stays in Cape Side and pushes a mop. But, yeah. And, you know, that's just fun to get to throw that stuff on and go, you know, jump on camera for a little while. The best shot to see, the two best shots, there's a conversation between Cliff and Jen in the high school, and it's a T intersection hallway. And they're like up in this section, and I'm back in the back of it mopping or brooming. So that's one you can really see me real well there. And then it's a really cool shot. It's an Eve episode, and they're coming into the school to steal the test. And I'm countering the camera with a broom. Like, it starts on the broom and then comes up as I'm pushing the broom. Me and the broom goes past camera, and then suddenly there are the actors coming in the door, and we all pass each other. So that's the other one where you can really see me. My back's to camera, but it's still obviously me. So those are the two to watch for that. And then I'm in a couple of other little spots. Like I said, I appear at least once a season as the janitor. And then just the one speaking role. But that one, I mean, yeah, I got a residual check a week or so ago. It's $20. You know, am I retiring on it? No. Can I go out and get a lunch for free for nothing, for something you did 25 years ago? Sure.
I think it's cool.
I'll take that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it, Craig. Oh my God. All right. Well, I'm trying to go through my brain, and because we asked pretty much everything that we were going to ask with the questions.
Yeah, we picked your brain.
No, you're such a good interview because you just keep coming up with more things. Oh, wait. Before we end it. So you like the Witch Island episode. I have to tell you, Craig,
I do.
Not my favorite episode. I remember recapping it, and I said I remember liking it back then. I watched it again. I did not like it that much. Me and Jamie argue all the time that they were ghosts at the end of the dock, and she says it wasn't. It was the boat captain or whatever, the boat guy and the lady who ran the
lady. The gift shop. Said, yeah, we argued about it. I'm like, no, they're messing with them.
Yeah, and I said, they're ghosts. They have to be the ghosts. What do you believe?
Well, I have a little more inside knowledge. I mean, I can tell you what I believe. I believe they're ghosts.
Okay, thank you. I do,
but,
too.
But the reality of it is, James Whitmore wanted them to be ghosts. He wanted to present it as ghosts. But there was some feedback from either producers or network or somebody that said you have to leave it, you know, where yes, exactly. You got to leave it ambiguous. Because otherwise the show instantly becomes X-Files Junior. You can't really make it a solidly, you know, supernatural thing.
Right.
So they had to leave the ambiguity. But yeah, of course I'm gonna fall towards that.
The ghost side.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I said. I was like,
All right. I concede.
Oh, you, Jamie, you can believe what you want to believe. It's just two against one right now, okay?
So we were out at Orton shooting that episode, and one night I got in the van. The base camp was way around because you just couldn't have all the trailers out there in the darkness. So it was up front of the Orton plantation where there were more lights and things. So we were taking one of the vans around, and the van driver had installed one of those police lights that they shine on your car, those incredibly bright lights mounted on like their rear view or their side view mirror.
Yeah.
We had one of those, and they said, "You want to see something?" The van driver said, and I'm like, "All right, I don't know what that means, but okay, I'm game." So he stops the van and he takes that light and he shines it out off to the side of the van out in the darkness out there. And there were 8,000 green eyes out there looking at us. And it was all, it's alligators or crocodiles, whatever we have. And they were out there with their eyes up out of the water. And when you shine that light on it, reflects back, you know?
Yeah.
I was terrified for the rest of that shoot because to know, I mean, I'm not kidding. You couldn't have counted them. I don't know how many there were.
That's spooky.
It really was.
That's awesome.
But we had a snake wrangler, and he was also a gator wrangler. Keep literally walking the perimeter around the set to make sure nothing creeped in.
Yeah.
Every time, every show, if you go out to Orton, Orton's closed now, but back then, any show, and I worked out there a lot, you always had the wrangler guy who would walk the perimeter and keep you from, you know, had like a machete and a shotgun. You really don't want to get a gator getting one of your actors, you know?
Oh, no.
So
I feel like when we went, we did a boat ride or something. And I feel like we went somewhere with alligators. I might have like a
Greenfield Lake. Greenfield Lake definitely has alligators, and you can paddle boat. So
we didn't paddle boat, but there was a boat. I remember somebody was driving a boat and we were just on it for, yeah, I'll have to find the, like, I know I have like a stub or something of what it was, but I'll have to find it. Cause I got a picture of the
boat. Was it where the ruins were that they kept going to first season?
No. And I never knew. We never went there either. And I always wanted to go there. I always wanted to go there, but we never made it. And I don't even know exactly where it is, to be honest with you. I don't know
why. It's a place called Early Come Back Down. It's still there. So yeah, definitely go. It's a paid admission place, but it is a beautiful spot. And it, as far as I know, it hasn't changed an iota since we shot there. So that same arbor, that long tree covered, or, you know, covered arbor, ivy covered, whatever it is. And you walk all the way down, and then all that stone work and the columns and everything all looks exactly the same. So I would think that would be a Holy Grail Dawson spot to visit. So highly recommended.
Yeah. I don't know why we did it.
Steven, if I end up moving out there, now we got something to do.
I know, we keep saying we're going to go to Wilmington together just to have that experience because we are doing the show. And you know, it's, you know, like I said, it's been such a long time since I've been there, and it would be fun to go back and revisit all those spots. It would just be so nice, I feel like, but we have to figure it out.
All right. Always going to pitch. Here we go. I'm pitching. Here we go. You ready?
Oh, yeah. I'm ready.
You guys come to Wilmington and we do a live podcast
from Hell's
Kitchen, the three of us.
Are you kidding
me? Let's do it.
And then maybe we can even walk around downtown to all the locations, you know, during the
that would podcast. Be so cool.
I would do it in a heartbeat, Craig. Are you kidding me? That'd be so
fun. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I would love it. So, we would totally
be. And on that note, we'll finally let these people go to the bathroom that have been listening to this for all of this time.
Craig, they can go to the bathroom with their headphones.
They took us with them.
I know.
No.
They're probably sitting on the toilet thing as we
speak. I know.
Well, of course they did.
Well, before we go, Craig, tell everybody where they can find your social media, because it's amazing. For any Dawson's Creek fan, or, you know, anybody who just likes looking at things with movie sets, look at Craig's social media, because it really does give you like a hit of nostalgia, especially if you are a Dawson's Creek fan.
Well, Dawson's Creek Obsessed, isn't that my group? It's not really my group, but I'm a big part of it. It's the only group that I really post everything in. They're on Facebook, and I'm looking the name up, be sure. Dawson's Creek Obsessed. So if you want to see my behind-the-scenes pictures on Facebook, that would be the place to go. And then my Instagram is unknown to me until I get to look at it. Craig Edwards 9981. And that's all I post there. It's all Dawson's and behind-the-scenes stuff from my movie and TV career. Mary Margaret got me to join Instagram, and I saw all that she posts, and I said, well, let me throw my stuff in here too. So feel free to jump on board with that. Most recently, a continuity photo of Katie, and I finally got the answer, by the way. One of the makeup artists commented and told me that they had just gone digital, which is why that's not a Polaroid, because that's all they use. But somebody got a digital camera, and they set a printer up in the makeup trailer, and they would take the pictures on set and then go back and plug it in with a cable and print the pictures out on photographic paper. So that was a high-tech thing to be doing in, you know, 2000, 2001, whenever that was. So, yeah, and thanks for the shout-out there. So, yeah, anybody who wants to follow any of that stuff, please do. I don't overwhelm with posts. I try not to, but I throw something up every few days at Instagram, and then the Dawson's thing I try to do a couple a week, so...
Before we got on here, I found a picture of you on Pinterest with
you sure did
and Josh, and I said, "Is that Craig?" And I sent it to you right away. You're like, "It is."
That was base camp at the studio, and I think they're talking to Josh's dog Shumba.
Yeah, I figured it was his dog.
Yeah, and Shumba, he spelled it like Simba, but gave it the pronunciation, the local pronunciation, I guess, for African, because he was an African. Rhodesian Ridgeback. That was what the dog was.
Nice
and
dog.
Shumba was a sweetheart of a dog. If you guys, I don't know, did you ever encounter him when you were doing extra work and stuff? Because he was around the set most of the time. He stayed on the wardrobe trailer with our wardrobe supervisor. Had, you know, food bowls, water bowls, you know, and the wardrobe supervisor would walk him and everything. I mean, Josh had a primo set up there to have a dog around. And John Wesley Shipp also would bring his dog Mo. To the set. Mary Margaret had dogs, but they would come in the car with her husband. Sometimes he would drop her off, and the dogs would try to come through the glass and eat me. So I don't know what was up with those dogs. I'm glad they didn't stay around the set, because I would have been terrified.
That's hysterical. Jamie, why don't you tell everybody where to find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jlyn_booklover.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
And if you want to follow us, you can find us on Instagram at Creek Talk Podcast and on Twitter at Creek Talk Pod. You can also join our Facebook group. And if you want to send us any type of feedback or any type of fun story that's Dawson's Creek related, you can send that to creektalkpodcast@gmail.com. Go to our link tree in our bio and click around and you'll find us everywhere. And if you want to join our Patreon, you can go ahead and do that. We would have greatly appreciate it. We are currently almost finished recapping the first season of Young Americans. And
first
roller coaster. Roller coaster, Craig.
A roller coaster.
And
Will Krupski.
Yes, Will fucking Krupski. Will Krupski. The most boring character on TV.
He comes in and we do that episode, and the actors, you know, not saying anything, the actor was fine. He was great. They liked him, but it was just the weirdness of this supposedly great friend of theirs that had never been mentioned.
Yep.
Just to spin, you know, the character off. But that episode also has, I'm forgetting her name, from Modern Family.
Julie.
Yes.
Something.
She played Aunt Gwen. I remember the character name, of course.
Aunt Gwen.
But that was another person that we worked with at the time, and had no clue that, you know, she was going to go on to be, you know, 10 seasons of the mom on Modern Family.
Yeah. So, killing me. I can't think of her name right now. It's going to drive me nuts.
You'll remember eventually.
I know.
3 in the morning, right after the other thing.
Yeah, no, it's gonna go in order. Then, yeah.
And we just can't stop with the story. This is the best outro we've ever done.
You just gotta hit the button at some point because I just won't shut up.
No, I love it.
We don't mind at all.
And if you're feeling generous, you can give us a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. We will greatly appreciate it. But once again, Craig, thank you so much for coming on. This has been such a pleasure. You're such a class act. Yes. And we love just listening to you talk. It's been amazing. Honest to God. Wow. Like, thank love you all the so story. Much.
Thank you. Thank you so much thank for coming. Guys.
Really appreciate it. And who knows, maybe we'll do this again and maybe that live one from Hell's Kitchen someday.
We'll figure it out. We'll definitely do it.
Definitely.
We'll be back next week with an all new episode of Creek Talk Podcast.
Bye.
Say something stupid. Say something stupid so I can end it.
Something stupid.
Yeah.
Thanks, Greg. That was
perfect. Thank you. It was perfect.
Talking about the creek, creek talk, talking about the creek, creek talk, talking about the creek, talking about the